So right now you are automatically doing the one thing keeping you alive.
Breathing.
Exactly. You're breathing. You don't have to think about it. You
Yeah.
don't, plan for it. Your body just handles it completely on autopilot.
Right, thankfully.
Yeah, thankfully. But what if I told you that consciously stopping that process, like voluntarily cutting off your own air supply for just a minute or two a day, could actually be this ultimate shortcut to rewiring your brain
Wow.
and repairing your DNA and literally forcing your blood to upgrade your physical health?
I mean, it sounds totally counterintuitive,
Yeah.
right? Almost reckless on the surface. Because we're all conditioned to believe that oxygen is good, so, more oxygen must be better.
More is always better, right?
Exactly. And taking away oxygen is fundamentally dangerous.
Right. And yet our mission for today's deep dive is to explore exactly that. We're looking at this fascinating blog article. It's titled Breath Hold, written by a guy who goes by the moniker Puru the Guru.
Pooh the guru, yeah.
Yeah, and Puru isn't just, floating some wild theory here. He has actually performed a breath hold every single day for over 2,085 consecutive days.
That is just
Right. Think about that.
nearly 6 years.
Nearly 6 years. No excuses, no sick days. He didn't skip because he was too busy. So we're exploring his really intensely personal practice, and we're jumping down the rabbit hole of all the medical and scientific sources he links to.
Which is a huge stack of research.
It really is. To understand the actual vascular biology behind what he's claiming, we want to uncover how depriving yourself of the most essential thing you need to survive
Yeah.
actually resets your nervous system and builds this unbreakable mental resilience.
And that timeline, the over 2,000 days, that is so critical to keep in mind here.
Why is that?
Because the physiological and psychological adaptations we're going to unpack, they don't just happen from trying this once on a dare.
Right, it's not a party trick.
Exactly. They are the result of compounding daily consistency.
So let's actually start with the sheer reality of doing this every single day.
Mm-hmm.
Paru is doing this seated. He's doing it walking, climbing stairs. He even talks about doing his daily breath hold sitting on a commercial plane, like as it's accelerating down the runway for takeoff.
Oh, wow. Talk about a high-stress
I know,
environment.
right? He describes it as his ultimate non-negotiable tool, and he uses this phrase, deprivation for joy.
Deprivation for joy.
Yeah, and honestly, I read that phrase and thought, really? Because holding your breath until your chest is literally convulsing and you're desperate for air, that sounds like pure torture.
It does.
And I have to push back here a little. Like, is this just repackaged macho posturing? The whole no pain, no gain mindset? Because my body certainly can't tell the difference between me holding my breath and me drowning. It just knows it's panicking.
Well, it's a very fair question. If this were just about, being tough, the benefits would be superficial at best. But what Peru taps into here is this fundamental biological mechanism called hormesis or hormetic stress.
Barometric stress, okay?
Right. And to your point, stress gets a terrible reputation because we usually experience it chronically.
Yeah, like a toxic boss or a mortgage payment or, doom scrolling at 2 a.m.
Exactly.
That kind of stress just ruins your health. It floods you with cortisol. So why wouldn't a breath hold just add to that, like, toxic bucket of stress?
Because of the duration and the control, that's the key. Hormesis is a biphasic response, meaning the effect of a stressor totally depends on the dose.
The dose makes the poison, basically.
Precisely. A massive, chronic, uncontrolled dose of stress breaks down your immune system. It destroys your tissues. But a tiny, highly concentrated, temporary dose,
Like a breath hold.
like a short breath hold, that triggers an entirely different pathway. Your body senses this brief, acute threat, survives it, and then it massively overcompensates by upregulating its defense and repair mechanisms.
So it's better prepared for next time. Okay,
Exactly.
let's unpack this. It's almost like running a daily fire drill for your nervous system.
That's a great way to put it.
You're intentionally setting off the alarm, letting the panic rise in a perfectly safe environment, so that when real life actually throws a crisis at you, your internal emergency response team isn't, caught off guard.
Yeah.
They already know the drill.
I really like that analogy. You are teaching your nervous system that an alarm bell is not an actual catastrophe. You're building a buffer against panic.
Okay, that makes the mental resilience aspect click for me. But Puru drops some pretty heavy physical claims in this blog article,
He
too.
really does, yeah.
He mentions that regular breath holding can temporarily boost your VO2 max by up to 5%, increase erythropoietin,
VP, right?
EPO, which builds red blood cells, and lower resting lactate levels by 15%. So let's translate this for a second. VO2 max is basically the size of your body's oxygen engine, right?
Correct.
It's how much oxygen you can use during intense exercise.
Yeah.
And resting lactate is essentially the baseline level of metabolic waste in your muscles.
Right. So a high VO2 max means you have a highly efficient engine. And low resting lactate means your engine runs clean without accumulating that fatigue-inducing waste prematurely.
But, and this is where I get tripped up, how does not breathing make you better at using oxygen? I mean, it feels like trying to get better at driving by deliberately starving your car of gas.
It does sound like a paradox. To solve that, we have to look at the exhaust fume of the body, which is carbon dioxide.
Okay.
We are taught from childhood that oxygen is the hero of respiration, right? And carbon dioxide is just the toxic garbage that we desperately need to exhale.
Yeah, exactly.
But that is fundamentally backwards.
Wait, really? CO2 isn't just waste.
Far from it. Mm-hmm. CO2 is actually the master regulator of oxygen delivery in the body. And this brings us to a really beautiful piece of physiology called the Bohr effect.
The Bohr effect.
Yes. When you hold your breath, you aren't just slowly running out of oxygen. You are actively trapping the carbon dioxide that your cells are constantly producing.
And building up that CO2 does what exactly? Like, why do we want that?
It changes the chemistry of your blood. So as CO2 accumulates, it reacts with the water in your blood to form carbonic acid.
Okay.
This immediately drops the pH of your blood, making it more acidic. Now, your red blood cells have this protein called hemoglobin.
Right, hemoglobin.
Which acts like a transport vehicle for oxygen. When the blood around the hemoglobin becomes acidic from that CO2 we just talked about, the hydrogen ions bind to the hemoglobin and actually change its physical shape.
So they literally warp the vehicle.
Yes. Biochemists call it the chi state or tense state. And here is the magic of the Bohr effect. When hemoglobin is forced into this tense state, it loses its grip on the oxygen it's carrying.
Oh, wow.
It forces the hemoglobin to literally eject the oxygen into the surrounding tissue.
Hold on, let me get this straight. Without the carbon dioxide building up, making the blood acidic, the oxygen would just stay like stubbornly glued to the red blood cell.
Exactly.
And it would just cruise right past the muscles that are begging for it.
You've hit the nail on the head. Imagine hemoglobin is a very strict, tight-fisted delivery driver. If it's driving through an area with low CO2, like your lungs, it hugs those oxygen packages really tight.
Makes sense.
But when it drives past a working bicep or a quad muscle that is just churning out CO2.
Because you're exercising.
Right. That local CO2 acts like a crowbar. It pries the oxygen out of the driver's hands right where it's needed most.
That is fascinating.
So by practicing breath holds, Puru is essentially training his body to tolerate higher levels of CO2, which dramatically optimizes this localized oxygen unloading process. The exhaust unlocks the fuel.
That completely flips everything I thought I knew about breathing.
Yeah.
So Puru is basically upgrading the delivery network for his muscles.
Exactly.
But let's shift gears from the muscles to, you know, the biggest oxygen hog in the body, which is the brain.
Oh, absolutely.
Because our brains consume something like 20% of our oxygen supply. So if we were cutting off the air, does the brain just start shutting down? Because Puru claims this practice strengthens cognitive resilience. He frames it as a literal brain upgrade.
Well, what's fascinating here is the brain is incredibly selfish, and it has an amazing localized defense system.
Selfish, yeah.
When you hold your breath, CO2 crosses the blood-brain barrier almost instantly.
Okay.
The brain senses that rising CO2 and the falling oxygen, and it panics, but it's a highly productive panic.
A productive panic. I like that.
To protect its supply, it aggressively dilates the cerebral blood vessels. It forces the pipes wide open to catch whatever oxygen is left in the circulating blood.
How does it force those pipes open, though? Like, what's the mechanism?
It's a cascade of chemical signals. Hmm. Drop in oxygen causes a local drop in ATP, and ATP is the energy currency of your cells.
Right.
When that energy battery drops, it triggers literal microscopic trap doors to open in the vascular walls. These are called KATP channels.
KATP channels, okay.
When they open, potassium flows out, which relaxes the smooth muscle of the blood vessel. And at the very same time, the brain floods the area with adenosine and nitric oxide.
Both of which open blood vessels, right?
Exactly. They're potent vasodilators.
But the brain is chemically screaming, open the floodgates.
Yes, precisely.
Now, here's where this deep dive gets really interesting. Because we are talking about KATP channels, adenosine, and nitric oxide.
Yeah.
This is highly modern vascular biology.
No, it's very modern.
But Puru connects this straight back to an ancient yogic text, the Hatha Pradipika. In his research stack, there's this Ayurvedic study analyzing a practice called Nishisha Rachaka Pranayama.
Right.
And this is just, you know, taking a big gulp of air and holding it. This is exhaling completely, emptying the lungs down to their residual volume, and holding your breath on empty.
Which is incredibly difficult to do.
Yeah.
And that physiological state, holding on an exhale, it creates a very rapid, specific kind of stress. Because your lungs are empty, the blood circulating through them returns to the rest of the body without being reoxygenated.
This induces a brief state of intermittent hypoxia.
And what does that brief lack of oxygen actually do to the cells?
It triggers the release of VEGF, which stands for vascular endothelial growth factor.
Okay, let's break that down for the listener. What exactly is VEGF doing?
It's the signal the body uses to build brand new blood vessels.
Yeah.
It promotes angiogenesis.
Wow.
If your brain senses a brief controlled lack of oxygen, it thinks, uh-oh, we need better infrastructure here. And it literally starts building new microvessels, bypassing older, narrower ones.
That is wild.
But it goes even further than that. That same brief hypoxic stress induces the P53 protein.
Oh, I've actually seen P53 referred to in oncology literature. They call it the guardian of the genome, right?
Exactly why. P53 is essentially a cellular building inspector. When you induce that brief hypoxic stress, P53 halts the cell cycle and it scans your DNA for damage.
Just from holding your breath.
Just from that brief hypoxia. If it finds damage, it orchestrates the repair.
Mm.
And if a cell is too damaged and, you know, might become cancerous, P53 triggers apoptosis.
Cell death. Right. It forces the cell to self-destruct for the good of the body. And on top of all that, these brief hypoxic holds have been shown to mobilize stem cells from the bone marrow.
That is just staggering. I mean, by sitting quietly and just waiting after an exhale, you are literally commanding your DNA to inspect and repair itself and ordering up new blood vessels.
It's remarkable.
But, and this is a massive warning sign, knowing human nature, if a little bit of stem cell mobilization is good, someone listening is going to think, great, I'm going to hold my breath in my swimming pool for 5 minutes and become Wolverine.
Oh, absolutely not. No.
Right. Puru is absolutely rigid about safety in his writing, and we really need to talk about the lethal risks of doing this wrong.
We absolutely do. Puru treats his practice as a dry, seated relaxation drill. It is not an extreme sport.
Not a competition.
No. And this comes back to the hormetic curve we discussed earlier. A small dose of stress is a cure. A massive dose is poison. If you push a breath hold past a safe limit, especially in water, the risk is hypoxic blackout.
Let's really map out how a blackout happens.
Yes.
Because Puru explicitly warns against a very common mistake people make, which is hyperventilating before they start.
Yes.
And the logic seems to make sense to a beginner, right? They think, I'm going to take 30 huge, fast breaths, pack my lungs with extra oxygen, and then hold it. Why is that such a deadly trap?
Because you aren't actually packing in more oxygen.
You aren't.
No. At baseline, a healthy person's blood is already about 98% saturated with oxygen. Taking 30 massive breaths doesn't squeeze much more in at all.
Okay.
But what hyperventilating does do is radically blow off your carbon dioxide. You are artificially plummeting your CO2 baseline.
And CO2 is the alarm bell. We established that earlier.
Exactly.
The burning in your lungs, the panic, the urge to breathe. That's not your body saying, I'm out of oxygen. That's your body saying CO2 is getting too high.
Precisely. So if you hyperventilate, you start the breath hold with almost zero CO2. As you hold your breath, your body steadily consumes oxygen. But because your CO2 started artificially low, it takes much, much longer for the CO2 to build up to the point where it triggers the urge to breathe.
Oh, I see where this is going. It's like taking the batteries out of your smoke detector because the beeping annoys you.
That's a terrifyingly accurate analogy.
The fire is still burning, meaning your oxygen is steadily dropping, but you've intentionally muted the alarm. So you pass out from lack of oxygen before you ever feel the urge to breathe. The lights just shut off.
That is exactly what happens. And if you are sitting on your couch, you pass out, your autonomic nervous system kicks back in, and you resume breathing.
Right. You wake up gasping.
But if you do this in the water, a blackout is fatal. And being in the water adds this terrifying layer called autonomic conflict.
Autonomic conflict. Let's unpack that. I'm guessing this has to do with the body getting crossed wires.
Yes. When you jump into cold water, your sympathetic nervous system triggers the cold shock response. Adrenaline spikes, your heart races, and you involuntarily gasp for air. But the moment you submerge your face and hold your breath, you trigger the mammalian dive reflex.
Which is different.
Very different. This is a parasympathetic response governed by the vagus nerve. Its job is to dramatically slow your heart rate, which is called bradycardia, to conserve oxygen.
So your cold shock response is slamming on the gas pedal, screaming beat faster and gas,
right,
while your dive reflex is simultaneously ripping the emergency brake, commanding stop breathing and slow the heart down.
It's a literal physiological tug of war on your heart, which can trigger dangerous arrhythmias.
Wow.
Add in the silent CO2 alarm from hyperventilation and the dropping oxygen levels, and you have a perfect storm for a sudden silent death. This is exactly why Puru's rule is non-negotiable. Never hypoventilate and do this dry and safe.
Dry, safe, and controlled. So let's bring this all back to the daily practical reality for you, the listener. Because despite all this incredible biology, you know, the Bohr effect, P53, VEGF, Puru primarily views this as a profound mindfulness practice.
He really does.
He talks about sitting with the panic. He describes observing his thoughts as the air hunger sets in, comparing it to riding a bicycle first down a gentle slope and then up a steep, agonizing incline.
It forces ultimate presence.
Yeah.
I mean, think about it. When you are 2 minutes into a breath hold and your diaphragm is spasming because it desperately wants air, you are no longer worried about a passive aggressive email from your boss.
Definitely not.
You aren't worried about the future or the past. You are entirely localized in the present moment of your own survival.
And the physical feedback is immediate too. Puru notes that his heart rate drops dramatically during these holds, sometimes going from 100 beats per minute down to under 30 beats per minute without moving a single muscle.
That's that parasympathetic brake kicking in.
Exactly. But I think the most powerful takeaway from his 2,085 days of doing this is what he calls consistency muscle training and how it attacks the implementation gap.
If we connect this to the bigger picture, that is the crux of his philosophy.
Right.
In our modern age, a lack of knowledge is rarely our actual problem. We all know we should sleep more, eat better, scroll less.
We have all the data.
We have the data. The bottleneck is the implementation gap. It's the vast chasm between knowing what to do and actually executing it.
Right. Intention versus action.
Exactly. And Puru uses the daily breath hold to bridge that gap. Think about it. A breath hold is brief, it is highly measurable, and it is entirely immune to excuses.
Because you don't need equipment, a gym, or money.
Nothing. You either stopped breathing today or you didn't. By facing this voluntary acute discomfort every single day, he is casting a daily vote for his own identity.
He's proving to himself over 2,000 times that he is someone who executes. It's the ultimate proof of self-control. And self-control isn't about controlling your environment or other people. It's the quiet mastery of your own impulses.
That's beautifully said.
It's taking yourself right up to that thin, uncomfortable line where the desire to quit is just screaming at you and simply deciding not to.
And if you can master that impulse when it comes to oxygen, you know, the most primal drive we have, you can certainly master the impulse to skip a workout or eat junk food.
Exactly. So let's bring it all together. Through Puru's 2,000-plus day journey, we've explored an incredible biological landscape today. We unpacked the Bohr effect, discovering that carbon dioxide isn't just waste.
Far from it.
It's the chemical key that forces your blood to drop oxygen right into your hungry muscles.
And we looked at the brain's brilliant defense mechanisms, opening those KETP channels to flood the cerebral cortex with blood.
Right. We saw how ancient practices completely mirror modern cellular biology, using brief hypoxia to stimulate new blood vessels and command the P53 protein to repair our very DNA.
And we confronted the deadly dangers of the hyperventilation trap, silencing your body's CO2 smoke detector, and the lethal autonomic conflict of practicing underwater.
Dry and safe only. And finally, we explored the psychological triumph of sitting in the fire of your own panic to build an unbreakable consistency muscle.
It really redefines what a health tool can even be. It's not something you add. It's something you briefly take away.
So what does this all mean for you? We spend our entire modern existence trying to accumulate things.
We do.
We want more comfort, more food, more wealth, more status, more supplements, and an endless stream of information. We think the answer to our problems is always found in consumption.
Just add more to the pile.
Exactly. But what if the ultimate shortcut to mastering yourself isn't found in consuming more? What if true resilience is found in mastering your reaction to the temporary absence of the one thing you literally cannot live without?
That's a profound thought.
The invisible multi-tool is right there, waiting for you to use it. Take a breath, let it out, and think about it.